This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
We live in a 21st century world. And guess what? Our brains just haven't caught up with that. They're designed to look out for the saber-toothed tiger, not a constant million dings and beeps from our smartphones interrupting us every couple minutes. So it's no surprise that anxiety is a massive problem in modern day life. But Dr. John Deloney says anxiety isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just an alarm system to keep us safe, and we can learn to tweak the settings. John is a two-time best-selling author, holds two PhDs, spent over 20 years working in crisis response, and now hosts the Dr. John Deloney Show on Dave Ramsey's network. John says that despite the good intentions of innovation, we've designed a world that we just weren't meant to live in. Trucks do the heavy lifting, air conditioners keep us cool, and algorithms decide what we experience. Our ancestors had to adjust to life's challenges, and that's one of the things that kept them healthy and connected. Today, it's so much easier to become overweight, as an example, when you don't really have to move. And today, it's harder than ever to form a community when you can sit inside alone all day long on your smartphone. That leaves many of us less happy and more anxious. And John knows how to help change that. He helps people navigate really tough decisions. He helps people improve their relationships and helps people accept that they're worthy of happiness. I know I could use some of that, and I'm pretty sure you could too. I'm Wes Moss. The prevailing thought in America is that you'll never have enough money and it's almost impossible to retire early. Actually, I think the opposite is true. For more than 20 years, I've been researching, studying, and advising American families, including those who started late, on how to retire sooner and happier. So my mission with the Retire Sooner podcast is to help a million people retire earlier while enjoying the adventure along the way. I'd love for you to be one of them. Let's get started. John, I actually want to even start this right out of the gate because I basically was like, I quit after going through all your stuff. I was like, I can't compete with this guy.
No.
I was like, hey, I quit.
You know what you have? You have friends. I don't have those. So good for you.
I was like, this is like the best. You have the best content in so many different ways. I can't compete with this dude.
Trust me. You can.
So I'm starting out the Retire Sooner podcast today, Dr. John Deloney. And, you know, when you do a deep dive into John's work, there's so many things that are so good about it and so interesting too. So I'm going through his content, I listened to like 15 of your shows and your clips and read, you know, not 100% of your book, but a big chunk of it. And I thought, I can't even compete with this guy. Your content is so interesting. And you've got a lot to offer on the thinking around money and the anxiety around money, but it's way beyond that. You go into all these different marital questions. I'm going to just go out of the gate here. And this is going to be like the spiciest part of any Retire Sooner episode.
Oh, let's get super spicy. That'll be fun.
I feel totally alone. These are titles of some of John's YouTube. I don't even know if these are YouTube clips, shorts, whatever they're called, but they're somewhere.
Sure.
And there's a reason you've got like over 500,000 subscribers. Some of these are watched like a million times. I love my preteen, but don't like her. So these are all John. These are clips of your show. These are all titles. I left the Mormon church, but my husband hasn't. And by the way, these are I chose the least interesting titles. I overheard my husband saying I'm not attractive. What should I say? This one, I regret leaving my wife for another woman. These are all questions that you get on your show. My again, here's an unspicy one. My mom had an affair with a Catholic priest.
That one was a doozy, man.
I guess maybe talk to our show. We're going to get to anxiety and particularly around money. I know you've talked about that. You're part of Ramsey Solutions, so you're a part of a money team. But you do spend a lot of time talking about anxiety and other, I guess, you tell us, because you go way beyond money.
I'm just a mental and emotional health nerd, and I was minding my own business talking to a bunch of college students and their parents in a small theater at the university here in Nashville, and Dave Ramsey's executive vice president was dropping her daughter off, and she said, I'm going to hire that guy. That's literally how this happened. And so I've just spent 20 years sitting with people when the wheels have fallen off. I was a dean of students at various universities for my whole career, and so I just sat with people when the wheels fell off, man, and figure out what we're going to do next. And now, as my 14-year-old likes to say, Dad, you're just a lame YouTuber. That's what you are now. So I don't know what we're doing, but I don't have like a great pitch other than I don't know anybody who's not going through something right now that's they would rather not talk about. Mm-hmm. And we don't have a culture where we are allowed to talk about hard things, and most of us are alone, and we've outsourced everything to those stupid phones, and so we got nobody, and that's the gig, man.
So you studied psychology, so you got your doctorate in that. Before you went into education, you were a dean for a number of years?
So, yeah, my first PhD was in education back in 2010, and then what I just saw over the first decade and into the second decade of working with college students and their families was, man, the issues changed dramatically from, hey, what classes should I take and what do I want to do when I grow up, to, hey, I'm thinking about taking my life, and hey, my son, you help my son with his anxiety disorder and my daughter with her issue. Do you mind if I swing by your office, if I fly down and you talk to me and my wife? And so I quickly was out of over my head. I didn't know what I was, you know, so I ended up getting a second PhD in counseling. And the quick differential is a PhD in psychology is often the study of people, and the counseling is the study of how to work with people. So yeah, it was just, I needed to sit down and help people in real time. I didn't have a lot of time, man. Someone sat down in my office and said, I don't want to be here anymore. And ready to go. Right.
Yeah. And you're like, wait a minute, over my head. I need to go get some training around this.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Talk to us, our audience, a little bit about the how the world has kind of evolved quicker than our humans have been able to evolve with it. And it's like, we're almost like fish out of water that creates all this anxiety. Explain what you mean by like, explain.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. The way I say it is we've just designed and created a world all with, I think, pretty good intentions. Of course, there's always idiots everywhere, but I think it was all good intentions. We just designed a world that our bodies can't live in. They aren't designed to live in. And so, man, we have created trucks. We don't have to carry heavy stuff anymore. We just put it in the back, and we created air conditioners so we can live 72 degree life inside, and then in our cars, and then in our offices, and our bodies never have to be hot, and they never have to be cold. And I, you know what I love? I love leather seats in my car and comfort. Oh my gosh. Can you imagine like riding across the country on a wooden bench being pulled by a horse? Like, that's awful. So it's all been great, except those were the things that kept us alive. Those were the things that gave our body's designed to be under stress. Our body's designed to be hot and it's cold and to have to move up and down through the fractals. And so it's designed for hard things. It's designed for small tribes of people who will give their life for one another. It's designed for not chaotic. It's designed for one tiger at the cave, not endless dings and clicks and bells and whistles and emails. And it's all coming down and news, 24-hour news. It's not designed for that. And yet I want to know where every threat's coming. And so I keep checking my stupid phone. My body just doesn't have an ability to metabolize all that cortisol, man. So it just, it implodes, right? And so we've created this chaotic world, and anxiety is not we talk about anxiety as though it's like a hoodie we put on or like a disease we got. It's not. It's just your body trying to get your attention.
Oh, he has anxiety. Ooh. Yeah. What's wrong with that, dude?
He's got it, right? I have it. No, you don't. It's an alarm system inside your body just saying, hey, we've identified you're probably not safe. Ta-da, that's anxiety. Mm-hmm. And the big challenge is, why did all of our alarms go off at the same time? Well, we've created a chaotic, crazy world.
That's what you're saying here is that we, to your point, your analogy is like, we're used to saying, well, we've got this one tiger, let's combat that, but not 100 tigers a day. And we've essentially, by being pinged by our phones and not being able to turn off the news and then social media, it's just, it's kind of a 24/7, which brings out the anxiety in all of us, is I guess where we live right now.
It's just your alarms are going off 24/7, right? And now we've moralized it. If you don't care about that small group of people over like halfway across the entire planet and what their plight is, it's because you're soulless. Mm. You shouldn't exist. You shouldn't be a person. How could you not care about and we just are not designed to carry that sort of pain. We don't have the capacity for it.
Let's talk about money. I want to start with some money anxiety. You talk about this thought around agency and that money, you can do this. You can make all these math decisions that kind of make sense. Like, oh, it makes sense math. But your brain continues to know the reality of what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah. So if you just step back 30,000 feet just for a second, just look at the system we've set up for ourselves. My granddad and his dad, the way you trapped somebody, basically they were like you turned a person into a rental property, passive income where they're always going to be yours and giving you money, is to get them in debt. Like that was a tool to grab people. And now you're nuts if you tell somebody to pay cash for a used car. You're crazy, right? And so I think we forgot how our brain works, and there's a part of our brain that is scanning the environment 24/7, 365 for threats. And if your brain knows that if you say just the wrong thing, and in this cancel culture world, your boss has to let you go because the HR committee voted, then you've got to go. Your brain knows that you lose your cars and your house and you can't feed your kids. Your brain would be failing you if it let you sleep all night in that scenario. It would be failing you if it let you stop and have a deep, emotional, intimate relationship with whoever you're married to. It's not time for sex. It's not time for sleep. We are at war here. They're going to take our house, right? And so the idea of, I don't care what the math is, if you have a position where you have shifted your retirement strategy for a short season, or for me and my wife, it was a long season. We didn't make a lot of money, so it was a long season. But now your brain knows, no matter what, they can't take your house. They can't take our home. They can't take our cars. You invested in education, so they can't take your earning potential, right? Or your capacity to do something. Now you can jump off the deep end and do some really wild things. Your risk profile shifts. And now I can go do that thing. I can quit my job that I worked 20 years to get and become a podcaster, take a risk because I don't owe anybody anything, and 10X your income annual, right? And you change everything about your family tree, but only because you do it in the right way.
So for you, when we, again, this is the Retire Sooner podcast, and we're always helping people have the position of economic freedom a little sooner. Maybe it's 6 months sooner. Maybe it's a year sooner.
Have it way sooner, yes.
Yeah, way sooner. And your our formula for being able to retire sooner on the financial side, there's only five things. And one of them, five lifestyle, five financial. One of the five financial that we found that correlates to higher levels of we call it happiness, but really it may just be peace of mind. And that is being able to retire essentially without a mortgage. I have a study that shows that we did some of our research has shown that as years to pay off mortgage go down, happiness levels go up. Now, I don't know if happiness is the right word for that. Maybe it's just our anxiety is going down and our peace of mind is going up. So for you, from a financial standpoint, the way you think around you think about this is much more around getting out of all debt to lower that anxiety.
I track with you 100%. Where I would double click is, I think chasing happiness, the pursuit of happiness, is actually what's killing us because happiness is a feeling. And I am not happy when I have to tell my wife, hey, we've exceeded our budget for going out this month. We got to figure out something to eat at home. That doesn't make me happy, but it does bring me peace. And so there's a difference for me between happiness and joy. my quick anecdote for that is my granddad died. He was a World War II vet. He fought Nazis. He raised four amazing kids in a 900 square foot home, right? He died at 93. During his funeral, my son at the time was two or three, and he saw we were all, they were playing taps and we were going to put a rose on the casket, and my son got out of my hands and he ran up and climbed up the casket and put a rose on himself. And it was the fourth generation of Delaney male, and everyone started, you know, crying. It was this beautiful moment. And was anybody happy? No. But was everybody joyful? Yes. Cause that was right. You know what I mean? It was the long life lived, all the friends and family are there, being honored by his country with the music. His fourth generation, the last male Delaney, 2 years old, climbs up there and drops it. That's joy.
You make me cry.
That's joy. It's not happy. Nobody's happy, right? So I want somebody to consider, just think about rolling over in bed and not having a mortgage. Hmm. And when I think about, if my mom is in her 70s, if she came to me and said, do I want to have another $500,000 that's going to be in a payout as a part of some sort of IRA product, or no one can ever take my home? I want no one to ever be able to take my mom's house. Let's start there and let's figure out the back end, right? Because the back end feels like I'm adjusting between, hey, no, you got to get that car fixed. You can't get a new car, versus, hey, you got to move into the basement. And those are like, I think we get stuck in the math sometimes and we don't go through, let's give our bodies peace. Okay, we can't take the house. Now we're good.
What about this thought around, we purchase, Americans purchase our way to peace? And by the way, marketing is, part of that is marketing is so damn good in America.
It's amazing.
It's like Mad Men were really good, and then they got even trickier with social media, and now they're almost impossible to ignore.
Oh, dude, you want to have your skin crawl? Sit in the room with those tech and the neuropsych guys. They're terrifying, man. And now they throw AI into it, man. They were scary before, and now the computer's like, no, we know. It's awful. It's wild. I think we've had to do that because I think it has shifted because we've created the loneliest generation in human history. And I think we don't have security and safety through a tribe anymore. We don't have aunts and uncles and cousins and you live with us, come stay with us. We'll make sure you got food. You broke your arm, we'll take care of you. Your kids are always going to make sure. We don't have that anymore. So the only path to neurological safety is I got my own house, right? Which, so on its face, it's insane, but I think it's the making the best of a terrible situation we've made for ourselves.
Wait, is that why why are we lonelier today than we've ever been?
I mean, I think there's 500 reasons to it. I think it's moving to the suburb, everything from geography to architecture architecture, meaning there was no air conditioner. So everybody had a front porch. You had to. And that meant you waved to everybody as they walked by. And then we screened them in, and then we got air conditioners. We closed them up. Then we put our porches on the back. And you can't walk through my house. I don't know you that well. But instead of, oh, that's Susie. She votes the wrong way, but she's real funny, and she always brings pie over. Now, that's just that lady with a sign in her yard. We hate her, right? And so some of it's architectural. Some of it is just simply technology. Some of it's too busy. Some of it is we're so insecure, we've outsourced our happiness to our kids and their athletic performance. And so we chase 9-year-olds all over the state with travel. I mean, we just created chaos. And then we tried to salvage it with, I still have long text threads with my high school buddies with lots of memes. And we call that community. It's not. It's not.
That's just what. So, that's just communication. It's not community.
I'm just communicating with you. I'm not connecting with you at all. Not in the physiological way. Not in the way we know this. 80-90% of communication is nonverbal, and we just outsource that 10% and we call it good. That's insane. I think of this. I could text my wife 100 times today. I love you. I love you. You're so beautiful. I'm so glad I married you. I'm giving her data, but I'm not the things that make her body go, oh, he loves me, is when I walk in the door and she feels my warmth, when I hug her, when I clean up, pick up my underwear, right? When I do those things that are human and there's skin-to-skin contact, when my hand touches her face or the back of her neck, then her body goes, okay, I'm safe. The data doesn't help. And dude, we've done that with every relationship we have, professional, friend, church, everything has gone online. And our bodies are just falling apart at the seams, man.
I want to ask you about your money journey, but I want to just stay with this topic right now. I mean, realistically, what What can we do about it? What should we do about it? And is it easier said than done? What do we do about that?
I that's actually the million-dollar question. And I've really tried to mine all the data, all my own personal experiences, the people I talk to, and here's the two things I've come up with. Drum roll, please, because these are earth-shattering. Number one, be weird. Number two, go first. That's it. That's all I can. And then number three would probably be say yes. Here's my analogy. I was the dean of students at a law school, and I'm not an attorney. There was three of us in the United States that were dean of students of law schools that weren't attorneys. And they brought me in to help the mental health of these young law students who were, I mean, just law students in general were not doing well across the country. Their mental health was in the toilet. And I came home day after day, week after week, telling my wife, who, and her PhD is in pedagogy. So she is,
well,
her,
what is that? What the?
She studies how to teach and how people learn. She's way, way smarter than me. And so I would come home every day complaining. These students don't know how to do this. They can't do this. They don't know how to talk, whatever. And one day over dinner, she just leaned over and she smiled and she goes, "Hey, I've been thinking, I have an idea for you at work." And I was like, "What is it?" And she goes, "You should quit." And I said, "Why?" And she goes, "Clearly your students are just too stupid for you. You're way too smart for these guys." And obviously she was making fun of me. And I got kind of quiet because she was right. And she goes, "Or another option is you could actually be a teacher and start teaching them the things that you think they need to know to be successful." And so we started Human 101 stuff, and it was transcendent. It was amazing. So I tell you all that to tell you, we've just entered into an era where over the past 10 to 20 years, we have lost the skill of sitting and listening with somebody. We've lost the skill of hearing somebody tell a story about how they're hurting, and we don't have to solve it for them. They're not stupider than we are. They don't want that. They just want us to hear them. We don't know how to sit in other people's pain. We don't know how, you know, we don't know how to celebrate with other people. If you walked in and were like, "Hey, you're not going to believe this, man. My kid got the part." Everyone would be like, "Oh, okay, my kid got the part." We don't even know how to cheer each other on anymore. And so
were we better? So you're saying that the last 20 years we've lost that. Were we better at that in like the 50s and the 60s?
Not even that long. Here's how I know. My dad was a homicide detective and a SWAT hostage negotiator for half my life. Then he quit over a weekend and became a youth minister at this giant church that we attended in Houston. And I remember him telling me, "You're not going to understand what I'm saying right now, but I'm your minister now and your dad, and you're not going to be able to hear me at all. And so I want you to find some men in this church that you trust, and I'll point you in the direction because I'm your dad." So fast forward 25 years, we had miscarriage after miscarriage after miscarriage. And then I was supposed to go get an appointment to go get taken care of at the doctor, and I didn't. And then all of a sudden my wife ends up pregnant, and that's my daughter, who's 8 now, Josephine. She's the human hurricane, the light of my life. But when she was born, I picked up the phone and called those men. Mm. And so I couldn't wait to tell them, and I knew they couldn't wait to hear it. Now it would be like, "All right, dude, right? Like, we don't have a capacity for that anymore. I don't got time for that. What's the ROI on this conversation? Why didn't you just text me?" Right? We don't have time for it. And so it's the 90s. This is not back in the good old days. This is just a minute ago.
Yeah.
And now our kids don't know how to, you give a kid feedback. My mom just retired as a professor. She's a professor for ages. She retired. She said, "I got tired of having college students' parents call me and ask why I gave them feedback, negative feedback on a paper." She was a literature professor. She's an English professor.
College
parents. And it was like, I just got tired of, like, I have to give you, you wrote a not good paper. My job as your professor is to say, "Hey, this isn't, in the real world, this is going to get you fired. Here's how you fix it." And the mom and dad wanted the grade. They want the grade. And so we have a generation of young person that doesn't know how to do it. And so instead of being mad and throwing a temper tantrum like I was doing back at the law school, I'm, okay, then we're going to, we got to learn. And the only way we can learn is Easter. We have at my house, we have, I call it the group of randos. It is a hodgepodge of people that my wife and I, like, who'd you invite? And this year, one of the people I just invited, I met her at a comedy club. She is a comedian and her name is Carolyn Xavier. She's all tatted up, showed up out. I live out in the woods and I was like, "You're coming to our Easter party." And she's like, "Can I bring my son?" And I was like, Yep. And dude, she showed up. We had a blast. Ended up, she grew up next to somebody. It was wild. But Imagine how weird that is for her to have some mental health podcast guy be like, you should come to my house in the woods. That's how horror movies start. And to have a group of people at my, you know, from my church, whatever. And dude, it was amazing. And so we all were weird. We went first. And I think we just have to realize this. The choice to be lonely is the choice to die early of countless maladies, heart disease, brain disorders, stroke, anxiety, depression. We can just go on and on and on and on. It's killing us. We are Netflixing ourselves to death. And so go make friends.
Go make friends. So that's, is that part of your, when you're saying be weird, is that?
Just ask the guy, hey, you want to go get a drink? Just ask him. Hey man, I don't know how taxes work. Can I go buy you lunch and you teach me? Like, I don't know how to do retirement stuff. You clearly do. You listen to Wes's show. Like, you know how to do this. Can I go buy you a drink and you teach me how to do this? What a gift. What a gift you would give somebody to say, hey, I don't know. Can you help me? Instead of going to a forum somewhere.
We keep hearing that inflation is coming down. But the past 3 years, the common man inflation gauge is still up over 20%. That's necessities like food, gas, utilities, and shelter. How can you possibly keep up? Well, one option is income investing. That's using a combination of growing stock dividends, bonds for more cash flow, and other areas that can be a hedge against inflation. Look, inflation is tough. Let us help you overcome it. Schedule a time directly with our team at yourwealth.com. That's yourwealth.com. So we're talking about anxiety. The way you put it is that it literally, and we all have it. It's just like, that's just normal. That is humanity.
It's a smoke detector. Yeah. That's all it is.
So we all got the smoke detector. How does that manifest into depression? Does it go into asking you in a little bit of a counseling sense?
Yeah. Counseling, I consider depression and anxiety on the same trend line. But the simplistic way I would say it is the alarm is, hey, look out, look out, look out, look out. And at some point your body says, I quit. I'm pulling the cord on this thing. This is never going to change, and this is your fault. Let's stop it. Let's just pull. We're pulling the string, so I can't get out of bed anymore. That's your body saying this is the best place for the safest place for us is to not exist, and let's shut it down. And so I think it's knowing that both sides of that are just your body trying to keep you safe, and occasionally it goes off the deep end, and so you need some significant psychiatric help, some medical help, some therapeutic help. Of course, I've been down that road.
Yeah, you seem like the last guy would ever be depressed in the world, but we all get some level,
man,
of this.
What
happened with you? Where was your? Tell us about a time when you were kind of mired.
It stems from. I've tried to track it all the way back. A, some childhood abuse. B, not from my family. And B, some. I watched my dad, who was a police officer, like a homicide attack, like a hardcore cop, have to mow lawns on the weekend because we didn't have enough money. And we had three kids. They shared one car. It's not like we had a big place. Mm-hmm. And I wrote about it in my first book. I remember my dad putting the ATM card in and knowing there's no money in there, hoping that he wouldn't get the rejection one. He would get the $45 overdraft. And as he tells the story, a woman who he had helped their daughter in the middle of the night, who happened to be the assistant store manager, came over and cleared it and said, hey, I'm sorry, sir, there's a problem with the register. Let me fix this. All right, your card's good. And she totally covered for him, and he carried those out. So in my house, I grew up seeing, if that's what the public thinks of public servants, I want nothing to do with that. I'm going to go solve this insecurity and this angst in my home and this chaos in my house by making a whole bunch of money and becoming so titled that you can't touch me. And that just meant I said yes to everything, and I jumped jobs and I looked for every promotion. I tried to get every raise, and I was always working three jobs. I was dean of students and a professor, and I was doing a side gig over here consulting with whatever. And eventually my body said, I quit. And then also I had a son. I didn't know how to be a dad. I didn't know how to be a husband to somebody I didn't know how to do any of those jobs. I just knew, okay, I can help my family, not by being a compassionate, connected husband or by being a connected father. I don't know how to do that. I'm clearly doing it wrong. I'll go make more money. That's how I'll help my family. And so I just worked more. And then eventually my body just said, screw you, man. I quit. I'm out. I can't do this.
You're redlining. Boom. You're redlining.
I ran out of gas. That's it, man.
And what happened though? What did you kind of just shut down for a while?
You're a finance guy, so you'll get this. I had calculated, beautiful mind style, Dude, I had spreadsheets. I had all sorts of things before algorithms existed. I just had mapped out after the 2008 and 9 recovery, as they started recovering back, I just created this path where, oh, this all ends. They're going to have to nationalize housing because the whole thing's going to fall over. They just propped it. And I was crazy. I was out of my mind. And I'd sold my house and moved my family into a residence hall so that I would not be held liable when this thing imploded. I didn't want to be, I mean, dude, I was nuts. And I was a YouTube conspiracy theorist before that existed. That was me.
So you believed it and you took action on that. I mean,
I took action. And I remember sitting down with the CFO of a $150 million company and I mapped it all out for him. He was a friend of mine. And I remember saying, I'm going to cash all this out. I'm going to move all this. And he looked at me and said, I don't understand what you're doing over here, like with my plan. And he just goes, don't do that. Like, don't cash out. Don't sell out. Please don't do that. And here's the deal. A PhD in education. I'm a mental health guy. I walked out of that and I stood outside his office and I thought to myself, he didn't see it. He didn't get it. It's all coming down. And so my big moment was I was walking across the campus where I lived to my office. And by that time I was over so much stuff. And I think that's the big illusion. People think crazy people are like, you know, hearing voices and running down the street. Dude, I was in a suit, man. And I would kept getting promoted all this time. I was good at my job. And nobody knew. They knew I was electric. And I turned around and got back in the car and I drove 3 hours away and met with my buddy who's a medical doctor. And I scared him to death. I said, I'm not okay. And this has to stop. And he says he still gets goosebumps to this day for that meeting. And he was a friend. He sat with me for 2.5 hours. And that was step one on the road back.
Ooh, I got a little goosebumps there too.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
Yeah. So now you've made a lot of progress. I mean, that's a long time ago.
That was over a decade ago. Yeah.
That's a long time ago. And I totally see. I think that it's hard. It's almost impossible to argue for anybody listening. Maybe not everybody, because I know that the watching of the news went down a lot. I think in like 2020 after, or maybe it was the year after COVID when we hit the brakes on the news, right? We ratings for, I think, CNN were down like 70% at one point. So people just
know the people are still listening. It just moved to Rogan and Tucker and it's moved offline into social media.
So you think we're still consuming just as much?
Yeah. The noobs. I mean, the numbers I got yesterday, in fact, was the YouTube now is bigger than all of the news sources. And so people are still consuming like crazy. They're just not consuming it at nightly news. They don't trust them anymore. Nobody's telling the truth in those platforms. And so they've just wiped them off. And I think, unfortunately, now there's no breaks, right? Now there's, you either have a tech company trying to censor something, trying to play referee, or you just got like some dude in a trunk somewhere in the back of a car with a secret YouTube channel telling you where the real stories are, right? And you're like, all right, dude, like, Bitcoin's not even real, man. You got to buy more Beanie Babies. And you're like, all right, cool. And I, what do you do? And so it's decentralized, which we all thought was going to be cool, but now there's no breaks, man.
So we're getting hit just as much everywhere. As we ever. You go through six choices, daily choices, that help, I guess, combat this. Can you walk us through that a little bit?
Yeah, pick a couple of them. I'll pick a few of them because all six of them, people start to roll their eyes to the back of their head. But the first one is choose reality, dude. Most, we call it the attention economy. It's not, dude, it's the distraction. Look over here.
Yeah.
Most of your listeners don't, well, your listeners may be different. Most people listening to my show if I said, what's your net worth? They could not give me that answer. They wouldn't know that number. And they'll say, I don't even want to know, man. I don't even want to know. And so we just Netflix, the next series comes up. They'll tell you when the next episode of, you know, like The Bachelor's going to drop, but they don't know how much is in their retirement account and how much credit card debt they have. So we don't know the state of our marriages. We don't know the state of any of that stuff. The second one is...
So it's like pull your head out of the sand when face reality is like pull your head out of the sand.
We've heard the phrase, the body keeps the score. Your body knows you don't have enough for money for retirement, whether you want to admit it or not. Your body knows, your nervous system knows that your wife is 2 inches from you on that couch and 2,000 miles away from you relationally. Your body knows. And
you may rationalize it, but your body knows.
That's right. Or when your teenager comes in and slams the door, your brain can go, or your frontal lobe will go, all those teens, your guts know, your nervous system knows, my kid's not doing okay, and I don't know how to bridge that gap. And it will, your body will shut you down. It will shut you down. And if it doesn't, it'll medicate itself with chaos theories and conspiracy theories. It will get that adrenaline. It will get that cortisol pumping because that's how it stays functioning. And so you got to choose reality. What is the state of your job? What's the state of your marriage?
You just brought up something I've never heard before, which is, it's almost like, how do conspiracy type theories, why are they so popular and so prevalent? And you just answered part of that, is that it gives, there's a certain adrenaline that it
gives you purpose in life. Yeah. We are so untethered, dude. We think about it, during COVID, we knocked down every societal pillar we have. Mm. We don't trust the government. We all kind of thought the government's probably kind of, you know, they got our best. There's crooks, it's the government, but they're trying to keep us safe. Education, like those teachers, they really love them kids. And, you know, my doctor, all doctors go to med school. They're all real smart. They all know the same stuff. And overnight in churches, like at the end of the day, they believe in Jesus and they're going to save us, right? Bro, overnight, it's like, dude, we don't trust the government. We don't trust schools. Our doctors are trying to kill you. Those teachers are trying to kill them kids, either by making them wear masks or not wear masks. And the churches that got political on one side or the other. And so they sold. Dude, overnight, we became completely untethered. And now we're so desperate for community. You know where we find it? Hey, I saw Bigfoot. Oh, yeah, I believe you, right? Or the earth isn't round. We're so desperate for connection and then purpose. And those, and it's, conspiracy theories fill both of those in a pretty profound way, man.
You talk about choosing freedom. Let's talk about that. How do we choose that?
That's everything from calendar to clutter to buying things. During my research for the book, Dawn Madsen, she goes by the minimalist mom. She introduced me to a Japanese minimalist, and he said this quote, and my eyes almost rolled through the back of my head when she told me this. I've just lost his name, but he's there in the book. That every inanimate object in your home is having a conversation with you all the time. And I was like, okay, whatever. And it sounded like, are you going to sell me essential oils too, Dawn? Right? Like, okay. And I walked into my basement. And I have this basement that's all mine, right? It is all my guitars, my hunting stuff, my libraries, because I'm just a nerd, all my little health and wellness, my red light gadgets, all the stuff. It's all down in my little basement area. And I got real quiet and I was like, ooh, talk to me, things. And listen, at first it was funny. One book, the rows of books were like, are you just never going to read us? You're just going to be stupid. And I was like, no, I'll read you, seriously. And then the guitars on the wall were like, remember when you used to like be good at playing guitar and you used to like play out and have a band when you were cool? Remember that? Remember your wife fell in love with you? Where'd that guy go? And I just started quietly listening and they never shut up. And then I went upstairs and the dishes were like, oh, you're going to be that husband? You're just going to walk on by? Because I guess your wife doesn't do anything, so she could probably do these too, huh? You're going to be that guy? And then my clothes were like, oh, remember when you used to actually lift weights and you could fit in us and now you can't. Like, and so I realized, oh my gosh, all our crap is talking to us all the time. And so it became, I'm not a minimalist by any stretch of the imagination. I'm more of a maximalist. I'm more of a prepper, but I don't need all this stuff. What are we doing? And here's the deal. It's very simple. My granddad lived in the Great Depression. He kept balls of string because there was nowhere else to get string. They straightened nails because that's all they had. And then my dad, who was told no every second of his life, was born in a generation. My dad's 75 now, 74, where they had this awesome new invention called credit. And dude, we're going to mail you a card. You can buy it later. And he overcompensated, bought everything. And now I'm in this world where it's abundance and geez Louise. And so freedom is from stuff. Freedom is from a calendar where if you have a calendar that you miss the first meeting by 10 minutes on Monday, your whole week falls over, which is my life right now. Freedom from, dude, the bank, a Toyota Motor Company, and I love Toyota, that's all I drive, they're not going to be the person who tells me I have to go to an abusive boss tomorrow. But if I have a car payment, I do. I got to go because I told them I'd pay. I said, hey, I'll drive your car home and I'll pay you back. And I told that bank, hey, if you let me live in this house now, I'll pay you back. And so they're like, cool, your butt's getting up and going to that abusive boss tomorrow. Your boss is going to that job that's killing you tomorrow. You're not going to stay at home and deal with that sick kid or take care of your wife who your relationship is crumbling. You're going to get your butt in that office. And so when we talk about choose freedom, I want to look all of us to look around and say, what are the things, the hobbies, the habits, the financial obligations, the can't say no to the in-laws, boundaries, right? Who is running your life? And the cool thing about your body is when it realizes you're in the backseat of your own life, it will sound every alarm you have because you're not safe. Mm-hmm. When you get back in the front seat, no matter what kind of treacherous thing you're heading into, when it knows you're driving, it stops being anxious. You look at Navy SEALs, those guys are, my dad, homicide, like walking into a SWAT situation. He was nervous. He was never anxious because they trained, they were ready, and he was making the call. He was in the driver's seat of his own life. And so if we get back in the driver's seat, man, 15 years it took me and my wife to pay off everything. 15 years. Once I started with a plan, and that's the Ramsey Solutions thing. Like once I started on a plan to pay off our debts, not owe anybody anything, to choose freedom there, I'm not anxious about it anymore, man. And you just follow the plan. It's cool. It sucks. It's annoying. It drives me crazy, but I'm not anxious about it. That's peace.
And where, and maybe this is in mindfulness of kind of six of your daily choices to help
Choose mindfulness. Yeah.
A non-anxious life. Is this where we kind of turn off phones? I mean, do I need a flip phone?
No, that's a separate conversation, but absolutely yes. Here's what mindfulness is. It's not like a dude on a cloud sitting crisscross applesauce with no electronics. That's not mindfulness is simply how far can you extend the gap between what just happened to you and your response to it? That's mindfulness. That is the guy cutting you off in traffic before that finger fires up off your, can you just take half a second before you grab that candy, before you grab that cigarette, before you respond to your wife, before you hit that kid, can you just extend that gap? And so meditation is getting rid of electronics for a season or for a while or for during the day. That is that is mindfulness training. That is just helping you extend that gap so that somebody says, hey, you suck. All right, man, have a good one, right? Like I'm going to go home because my life's pretty good. I don't need to respond to that. A non-mindful response is, oh yeah, you, and now I'm in a thing, right? Now I'm fighting somebody in a bar for no reason and I'm too old for that. So mindfulness is just, can you extend that gap before you go respond, before you reply to that email, before you reply to that Twitter, that Twitter thing, before you change the channel, before you pick up your phone and start swiping, before you cash out of your retirement, how far can you extend that gap? Slow down.
Have you ever done I guess we all did this because it wasn't that long ago before the iPhone came, or it wasn't that long ago, right? It's what, 07, I think, the iPhone? So it wasn't that long ago. But have you gone back to that, or you just have a kind of scaled down smartphone? I keep thinking about an iPhone. Flip phone. You do.
Yeah, I've got an iPhone. I went to a flip phone about 7 or 8 years ago. And man, it was kind of, here's the way I described it to my wife. It was like going to Mexico and saying, screw everybody, I'm talking in German, right? Like it didn't matter. So everybody talks via text, my boss, my friends, my wife, everybody. And so I was sitting there at a stoplight going, click, 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 B, click, 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 E. Like, and I realized, oh, I can't do that, right? When you sent for it, when the old phone bills back in 2006, they charged you per text. Like you were very judicious with your text. Now that's just how, so it's like, that's the language we speak. And so and unless they could come up with a smartphone, like a flip phone that you could talk into that would text it for you, that would be cool. But short of that, no, I mean, I have an iPhone. I've got some tips and tricks that I use at home with it, but the biggest one is my social media is on a separate phone and that phone stays off and I have to go through a couple of steps to turn it on. And so it's like getting rid of all the alcohol in your house and you have to get in a car and drive somewhere. And so there's at least a few hurdles before you make that next wrong decision.
I was going to ask you about that too. It's, you know, vices and addiction and things that go along that are supposed to help with anxiety, but they really kind of hurt anxiety. You know, maybe just give us your ideas about that.
Well, so addiction was a sin forever. And as a way to stop moralizing it, we turned it into a medical condition and called it a disease. Mm. And I think what ultimately is happening in the literature is it's an adaptive strategy that keeps you alive. And so I quit asking people, why are you drinking? I used to be my question, why won't you stop drinking? Mm-hmm. To my question now is, man, what in the world is going on in your life that this is the best way your body figured out how to survive? Why do you keep work? Why do you work 100 hours a week? Dude, what are you and your body hiding from, man? Like, what are you trying to get? Like, your dad's not going to call. He's not calling. He's not going to tell you he's proud of you. That call will never come. You can't buy your wife's love. You can't. And if you can, then she's not a great partner for you. Like, y'all need to have that conversation, right? So I think addiction, I used to tell my students that the worst part about cocaine is it works. It works. It's amazing until it kills you. The worst part about alcohol is it works until it takes everything from you. And so I look more at addiction. And by the way, working 150 hours a week is your body's hiding from the same thing as alcohol, right? It's the same thing. Sex, all of it's the same. You're just hiding. And so I have a lot more compassion about addiction because addiction works until it doesn't. So, man, what is your body trying to protect you from? That's a much more interesting question.
Now let's talk about relationships. You mentioned this thought that your body knows if you're 2 inches from your wife, but she's 2,000 miles away. What's the role of that daily anxiety on relationships? Because you do a ton of relationship stuff on your show.
That's mostly what the show is turned into. It becomes in relationship circles with counseling nerds, we call it the sick dance. My body recognizes that my wife is having to create a life of her own because I'm radioactive, because I'm anxious all the time. And when I'm anxious all the time in my house, I start talking about conspiracy. I talk like, what about this? And hey, did you hear about this? And this guy might get fired. And then all of a sudden this, and that's, it burns my wife out. And mm-hmm. So she has to create a pocket of space inside of our home that's full of 2 kids and 3 dogs and a bunch of chickens and a crazy husband.
So you're in the woods. That's right.
Yeah. There's banjos everywhere. I mean, we're in the woods. But she has to create a pocket of space, which might include putting her headphones in, listen to a podcast, which might, hey, I got to go upstairs and work, and she's a writer, so I got to go write. And that sounds my alarms. Oh, she's leaving you because I got abandonment issues. So she's leaving you. So it sounds the alarms a little bit louder, and I get a little more anxious, and I start spiraling, watching a little more YouTube, and I eat a little more junk food. And so I just amplify it. The way she described it was, I was like being married to a taser. I was so hard to get connected to because everything was so doom and gloom, or my body, like my heart rate was 10 or 15 beats higher than it should. Like, it was just always fight or flight. And it makes it impossible for her. So we're asking spouses to wade through that electric fence in order to grab our hand on the other side. And I get it when they say, I just can't get shocked anymore. And it makes the electricity harder, right? So the worst part about anxiety was this, that I found when I was writing that book, is that when you're anxious about something in your body and you avoid it. So here's one of my things. I got so freaked out about the economy. Mm-hmm. Back in 2008, 2009, because I realized, oh, that's a thing that can take everything from you and you can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Right. And as a control freak, you came from a wild house that was like, man, I'm going to control every variable. I'm going to get every degree. I'm going to make all this money and no one can touch me. Oh, no, there's this thing called called mortgage-backed securities that can go away and it takes everything. You're done. And so every time I would walk by a stock ticker and there was a red arrow pointing down.
Oh, you would get freaked out.
Dude, my stomach would drop. My heart would start beating. My stomach would get all that warm feeling as though I'm about to get in a fist fight in an airport, right? And it was my body going to fight or flight. And it would do it all the time. And what I learned in the neurological research is I stopped watching the news. I started avoiding that. What that did was it gave my body what it wanted. And so it actually reinforced and made the anxiety response stronger. It made it louder. So when you're anxious of something and you avoid that thing that you're anxious about, your body goes, oh, sweet, that worked. That kept us safe. Double click on that, put a GPS pin in that, and next time let's double it up a little bit because that worked. And so it actually reinforces and makes your anxiety stronger. The only way to be less anxious is to head directly through the damn thing that's killing you. That you have to go right through the middle of it. And I couldn't do that by myself. So I had to get a counselor. I had to get a doctor. I had to get some people to walk with me. But you have to go through it. And then when your body learns, oh, that didn't kill us, it quits sounding the alarm. It's like, all right, you're driving. That's cool. I just want to make sure make sure you're driving.
So this is why for you, choosing reality is kind of just,
it's the starting line.
Step number
it's
one. Start
of the, it's
it.
The start of the marathon. You can't run a marathon unless you know where the starting line is.
It's not avoiding it. It's going through it.
What are the state of things? How much money do I owe? How much money do I have in retirement?
It is that the thing, if you think about how you've kind of transformed over the last decade and a half or so, can you point to one most important thing that helped you with that? Or is it learning that you've got to go through that anxiety? Or is it getting out of debt? Like what is your top number one or two?
The number one was, so I worked with, while I was working at the law school, I also worked with the victim services, you know, crisis team. I had a patrol car and I would run crisis response with police department in the city where I worked. And I would get a text message. I was on call 24/7. I get a text message and it would just say 1087 and an address. And 1087 was the police code for someone had a deceased, someone had died. And occasionally it'd be like, I think it was a 1015. I don't remember all the codes now, but there was a domestic dispute or something. But I would show up to a house knowing someone in there is dead. I don't know if that's a 2-year-old. I don't know if that's a 17-year-old. I don't know if that's a 97-year-old. Here we go. And from those calls to all those years, 20 years working with students, a student coming in sobbing, my dad just died. My mom just left my dad. I wanted to take my life. I just got embarrassed because I was the only kid of this skin color. I got humiliated because like whatever, I was on the margins for whatever. We always, every single time, all those different conversations of hurting people, we always landed on the same question. What are you going to do now? No matter what trauma, what crazy thing I found myself in, we always landed on the same question. What are you going to do now? And that was choosing reality. That was the starting line for me. And so I started with my own anxiety, my own, what are we going to do about this? We got a kid and we got another kid coming. All right, what are you going to do now? Mm-hmm. Oh, I need to make a will. Mm-hmm. Oh, I need to sit down with my buddy Todd and my buddy Craig and actually walk through my finances and see where we are. Like, because it's not going to get done for you. So, oh, dude, I'm starting to get some chronic health issues, man. I need to sit down with the doctor and actually go down a rabbit hole. Because like, what are you going to do now? What am I going to do? Like, and that question has been a guiding light for me.
Yeah, it does make sense. I mean, I just think about the avoidance.
Let's think about this. Like you and your wife, like, yeah. I don't know, like if you're married, but.
Yeah, I'm married. I got four kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You and your wife, you and
still
your kids.
Still married.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you get the text message. But that question's so instructive. All right. So I'm pissed off at my wife. We are gotten sideways. What am I going to do now? Am I gonna hide? Am I gonna be immature? Am I gonna go watch a football game, or am I gonna sit down and say, "I'm sorry, let's fix this"? What am I gonna do now?
You know, I think it's 100% relevant if you're thinking about this journey around financial freedom and economic freedom. It's 100% accurate to say as we're avoiding it and we don't want to think about it, and we know it's a huge problem because most 90% of Americans don't really. We know 50-60% of Americans have zero plan whatsoever, zero savings. And part of that is environmental, and part of that is not necessarily because they haven't planned. But the reality here is that in order to get into this retire sooner journey, you got to be able to face it. And what are you going to do now? And so I think it is so relevant just for our audience, no matter what stage you're in. And by the way, no matter what stage you're in, I've found too, people think they're kind of 50% short. So they have a million, they're like, I need to get to two. Or they're always 50%. I have 5 million. I need to be a 10.
Well, and that's why. Hey, but that's why what you do is so valuable. That's why I call a coach. I've got a smart investor that I call him like, hey, am I good? And I talk to him a couple times a year. He's a friend, but I talk to him a couple times a year. And here's most of our conversations. Hey, man, what's up? Hey, you're gonna get an email, like an automated email about the state of your return. Don't open it. Just hit delete. Because you're going to freak out, Deloney, and you're going to call me and want to move everything to gold and nickel, and you're an idiot. Just delete the email because it's coming. And he puts a thing on his calendar to call me when he knows his system is going to send me an automated email. And the other one is me calling him. Hey, will you just run all my numbers real quick and make sure I'm good? And I'll get a text message back. He probably doesn't even run them, but he texts me back and he goes, hey, I looked at everything. You're great. You and your family are good.
Okay.
And it's just this quick, it's kind of like a little kid when they're young and they run out into the playground and they always stop and they look back. I just want to see if I can see mom. Can I still see mom? Can I still see dad? I see dad. All right, I'm going to go out further. That's all I'm doing. But that started with, okay, what are you going to do now? You come from a home with money insecurity. What are you going to do now? Blaming them doesn't help. My dad was a great man. He still is. What are you going to do now?
Before we get to some, I just want to get a couple examples from your show to our audience because they're it's fascinating. But before we do that, I just wanted to go to this concept about you are worth being well. Because you were just saying you grew up with some money insecurities like so many Americans. And people struggle, I guess, with their own worth. But what I want to get your take on, you are worth being well.
Yeah, it's twofold. Number one, I think one of the great illnesses of our time is that we answer the question, what are you worth, with a number. It's so gross, man. Like just sitting around having a bourbon with a bunch of dudes, like what's your worth? The answer to the question, what are you worth, is who do you love and who loves you every time. That is the answer to that question. It's not a numerical question. And so as a culture, we've defined our worth as a number. And as you said, 50%, 60% of people have no plan. Like they're paycheck to paycheck, right? What was that? The latest stat, it was a while, like what, 60, 70% of Americans can't come up with $400 cash or whatever that number. I mean, it was wild. So if that's the metric, then people think that I've got no worth. The second thing is, and this is the more insidious one, I think, we all think we are such a burden. We have outsourced. Think about this. I don't know if you're a churchgoer, but
it was just Easter and I went to church.
Congratulations. There was probably a greeting committee at that church. Like, that's an assigned role now. What are we doing? We have to assign a group of people the role of saying hi. We don't ask our neighbor for sugar or eggs. We just Instacart it. We just like Uber Eats it. We don't get hey man, can you take me to the airport? I know that sucks. And it's a 5 a.m. flight. I know. We just Uber there. So we've professionalized. We've outsourced human interaction because, dude, I don't want to bother them. And all the psychological research says, if somebody has a purpose and a role, especially in their community, it's a gift. And so the greatest gift I could give my neighbor is, hey, can I borrow a couple eggs? That's a gift to them because they can go, yeah. Here's a great example. I live out in the woods. My neighbor is a 76-year-old farmer. He's lived there forever, 150-year-old family property. My driveway is a long gravel driveway, and when it rains real hard, it washes out. So it gets these big divots in it. Well, one day he, on his tractor, leveled the whole thing for me. And I sent an envelope with my son, envelope of cash over there. It cost me $1,000 to have somebody come out and do that. And he did it for me. So I didn't put $1,000 in there, but I put a chunk of cash in there for him. And he sent it back. Mm. And he said, no, sir. And when I saw him down doing something on his brother's property, he said, hey, don't ever send money to my house. I was like, yes, sir. And he said it in a way that, you know, like I'm a young guy.
Yes, sir.
Like, yes, sir. Right. Well, the next time it rained, he did it again. So it was deer season. I sent a whole bunch of venison. My wife made this sourdough bread. She had some pickles that she had canned. And there was one or two other things in there. And I took it over there with my son and said, hey, I just want to say thank you. I can't let you do that for free. He saw that. He stopped doing his chores, his farm chores. He was all sweaty and he came over and he got all choked up and he gave me a big hug. And he looked at me and said, I'm your neighbor. And it was like, good. Oh, man, I've missed it. I have missed it. I was trying to turn a relationship into a transaction. And so at the end of the day, that idea.
So wait, hold on. He was cool getting the venison, but not the cash.
Oh, it. You know why? Because I gave him my time. I gave him my family's garden. I gave him some of our food. So the deal is, we don't even think we're worth the time it is to go exercise. I'm not even worth the time to fix my marriage. I'm not even worth the time to call my real estate guy to say I need to move. I'm not worth that. I'm not worth it, dude. It just is what it is. I'm just going to get older and fatter. My knees are going to hurt. It's just going to be what it is. And so I think all life change, whether it's I want to change how soon I can retire, I want to get out of debt, I want to do all these things. It all starts with, dude, you have to believe you're worth even the effort, because it's going to be a lot of effort. It's going to be hard. You're worth that effort, man. You're not a burden. And I think starting from there is the starting line. That's where the gun goes off. Because if you don't have that, man, what are you doing it for?
Yeah, it's the fuel you need your own. It's the fuel that you need in your tank.
Right.
All right. As we wrap up today, I want to just ask, you know, I was looking at your old clips, your new clips, your most popular clips. And you have such wild, I mean, you've almost turned into like the Dr. Drew, the Dr. Ruth, the all in one in all in your show.
That's some great company, right? Yeah.
And I guess but a lot of this goes back to relationship. These are relationship issues, and you know it's a lot about husband and wife, and maybe it's about either infidelity or lack of trust, or my husband did this or my wife did that, and then I feel totally alone. I hate my kid. I love my kid, but I don't like my kid. If you were to break down, if you were to think about, you know, your advice that ends up getting the fundamental bedrock of your advice that probably relates to a lot of these same questions, what does it come down to often? Hmm. Or is it, what are you going to do next? Or is the root of so many of these problems people are calling you with, is it anxiety?
No, I think we have a culture that's over-pathologized every negative feeling and emotion. And so when a guy goes to work and his coworker is beautiful and hilarious and she laughs at all his jokes and she remembers his birthday and his wife who's taking care of his three kids forgot or was like, oh, tonight it's going to be so fun. And suddenly for the first time in a long time, he feels alive and his heart starts beating a little like, right? He gets a little spark back. We think we're broken. We think something's wrong with us.
The guy feels guilty.
And there's nothing wrong. I am somehow dysfunctional. And you're not. You're not. So we've pathologized. No, it is totally normal to be attracted to someone who thinks you're funny and who's beautiful and kind and great and smart and brilliant and accomplished. You're crazy if you're not attracted to them. Now what are you going to do? Right? Now you have to be wise. Right? And you might have to ask for a transfer. You might have to stop telling jokes. You might have to leave your personal stuff for you and your wife. Or maybe you have to ask yourself, why don't I feel alive at home? And what role am I playing in that? And I'm going to go sit down with my wife. Let's go to a weekend intensive because let's get our spark back. Because that tells me I'm still capable of an inner fire. Let's go figure that out. And she might say, I'm not doing it. And now you got to deal with that. Right? And that's the choosing reality. That's the, she's right there. I'm all in. Well, I'm not. Right. And so all I have to say is most people think the moment they have a thought, the moment that they do the thing, they can never come back. And so I think the show for me is about redemption. It's about, hey, there's nothing wrong with you. You screwed up. Let's go fix this thing. And most people have nobody they can sit down and be totally honest with. They just can't say, there's no one they can just say, hey, man, I think I just blew up my whole marriage. I don't know what to do. And I think the show is popular. I used to think it was popular because of I was so smart and I had my great answers. Wes, nobody cares about my answers. Here's what they are into. They've never seen somebody compassionately talk to somebody who just blew everything up or had everything blown up. And so what I think is attractive about the show is the interaction, not the advice. It's the back and forth.
I mean, your father was a youth minister too, right? I mean, it's really, you've got a compassion like a preacher to some extent.
Well, he was a SWAT hostage negotiator. So when someone was going to jump off a building or kill themselves, they sent in my dad. And his shtick was the all shucks guy. Like he would have a t-shirt and some jeans and he'd be like, hey man, and what's your name? Tell me about your kids. That was what he did. So he was extremely skilled at that. But yeah, it comes from a place of, hey, let's take all of the heat in this room all the way down. It's just you and me sitting at a table having some nachos. We'll figure this out. We'll figure it out. And man, if you give somebody that, that's such a gift, right?
All right, we're going to let you go. I know you got to run, and we so appreciate your time and your wisdom.
Dude, Wes, you're all, hey, this is one of my favorite interviews, man. I appreciate you.
I knew
you.
This one was going to be good,
I appreciate you
man.
A lot, man.
You're the best. You really are, man. I really, really... I think you just keep helping a lot of people.
Yeah, you too.
And, you know, I'm sure if my advice on this podcast is you can just unsubscribe to mine and just subscribe to John's.
No way. You're awesome, Wes. Appreciate you, brother.
Hey, y'all. This is Mallory with the Retire Sooner team. Please be sure to rate and subscribe to this podcast and share it with a friend. If you have any questions, you can find us at wesmoss.com. That's WESMOSS.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and YouTube. You'll find us under the handle Retire Sooner Podcast. And now for our show's disclosure. This information is provided to you as a resource for informational purposes only and is not to be viewed as investment advice or recommendations. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal. There is no guaranteed offer that investment return, yield, or performance will be achieved. Stock prices fluctuate, sometimes rapidly and dramatically, due to factors affecting individual companies, particular industries or sectors, or general market conditions. For stocks paying dividends, dividends are not guaranteed and can increase, decrease, or be eliminated without notice. Fixed income securities involve interest rate, credit, inflation, and reinvestment risks and possible loss of principal. As interest rates rise, the value of fixed income securities falls. Past performance is not indicative of future results when considering any investment vehicle. This information is being presented without consideration of the investment objectives, risk tolerance, or financial circumstances of any specific investor and might not be suitable for all investors. Investment decisions should not be based solely on information contained here. This information is not intended to and should not form a primary basis for any investment decision that you may make. Always consult your own legal, tax, or investment advisor before making any investment, tax, estate, or financial planning considerations or decisions. The information contained here is strictly an opinion, and it is not known whether the strategies will be successful. The views and opinions expressed are for educational purposes only as of the date of production and may change without notice at any time based on numerous factors such as market and other conditions.